there's this misconception right now in the city that you can't find an apartment. And it's not true. If you're willing to pay the price and you are a good applicant, landlords are still very much keen to have your business. And in some cases, you may be able to get better terms if you are a really good tenant, because the applications out there are not especially strong. So now I feel we're back in that market where, as a landlord, you're saying, I would take a little bit less money or keep rents where they are to have a good tenant. Now, is that rents coming down? No. But rents flatlining while everything else is still going, like inflation is still a thing, is a huge change. When I was broke, I had rich habits. When I was broke, I had rich habits. Welcome.
Yeah.
Let's go. We are back, Master Keys, after a long hiatus.
Yeah, that was 7 months, 6 months.
Yeah, something like that. I think it was June, July of last year.
Midsummer. Just out of nowhere, no announcement. We just shut down shop.
Yes, and thank you to everyone who reached out and was like, where's the pod? Where's the pod? Where's the pod? And sorry for constantly saying, oh yeah, it's coming any day now, and then not delivering on that.
Yeah, seriously though, thanks to everyone. You guys kicked us in the butt and we needed that. And it's what brought us back right now. Like,
so why did we stop?
Yeah. So are we going to just start, first off, is this season?
Oh, jeepers. This is
season three?
The Renaissance. This is Jordan coming back wearing the 4-5 Washington Wizards.
Season three, episode one?
Sure. Let's call this season three, episode
Technically,
one.
Technically, we're 2024. So that's, yeah. All right. Season three, episode one. Welcome back. This is the reintroduction of the Master Keys podcast.
I just remember Jordan was wearing a 4-5 when he came back with the Bulls. Then he went back to 23 and he just came back to the Wizards at number 23. I don't want someone to correct that in the comments. Anyway,
they're going to.
Yes, they are going to.
I'm Neil Andrino.
I'm Chandler Halliburton.
And we're your hosts. And we are both real estate investors, real estate agents, guys that like to talk about real estate and what's going on in our market here in the Atlantic provinces and beyond.
That's right. We are here in Halifax, beautiful Halifax. This is actually pretty sentimental for anyone who's watching this clip and who might be like a day one-er.
Respect.
Because we are full circle back to this slightly creepy, very gray setup.
This is my office.
This is your office. One of your offices. But this is the same room where the very first episode was filmed.
This is where it all began.
Yeah. I think the lighting is slightly better now, but everything
else is...
We've added
some lights. Yeah. The only real change... Yeah, lighting definitely has increased. The biggest change I was going to say is I Amazon ordered this stripper pole light stick thing I have here now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very sharp.
Yeah. That was
really you classed the joint up.
Yeah. We really spiced her up in here. But yeah. So today we want to talk about kind of why we left, why we're back, what the objective is and the point of the Master Keys podcast for anyone who's new or may have forgotten over the last 7 months, which I imagine you probably did. And then we're going to dive into just the usual stuff. We're going to kind of go over what's been changing because it's been a crazy six, seven Ooh, months in man. A ton of ways.
I should have watched the last episode we ever recorded because I think we recorded one from PEI and never even posted it. But I would just want to know what was going on at that time versus what's going on now.
Yeah. I mean, it was the bloodbath of rates going through the roof.
Yeah.
But all right, before we get into all that, I mean, I'll start diving into why we stopped.
Yeah.
And there's basically, I think in my eyes, there's two main reasons. Number one being time.
Yeah.
It was a mixture of things. I had moved outside of the city.
Yeah.
So it was like 45 minutes to the studio for me. It was 25 minutes for Chandler. It was always a bit of a grind. Selfishly for me, it wasn't too bad because I lived close originally.
And your reception wasn't great out there either. So when we would try to record remotely, it wasn't always coming through awesome.
I set up a studio at home and my Wi-Fi was one bar at best most of the time. And for any of you guys that listen
lo-fi.
To the Canadian Private Lenders podcast that I did out there, yeah, it was lo-fi. It worked, but it wasn't great. And then the biggest thing of doing it remotely, I find, is you don't have the same...
There's not the same energy.
The energy's not there because you're not with the person. You're kind of waiting for their rebuttal. There's a little delay. So yeah, so time was a big one for both of us. And the market was kind of going crazy. And we had a lot going on with work. You guys know we made a lot of acquisitions. We had a bunch of renovations going on. There was so much turning over that we kind of had to start... And like personal life, like we had to deal with.
Yeah.
We had to start cutting some of the extra weight off to really focus on the core business. So that was number one. And number two is money. We were spending a ton of money to run this thing. And it was doing really well. Again, thank you to everyone who listened and supported us. And we had sponsors reaching out. It was going really, really well in that sense. But it was still a very costly venture. And we hadn't gotten to a point where it was directly making money. It was making money as per indirect referrals and business growth.
Yeah, we met a lot of you guys, both kind of socially and also some of you became clients over that time. So certainly there was money coming in as a result. Which wasn't the reason we started doing this project and still isn't why we're coming back now. We're going to talk about that in a second. But it does matter a little bit. And we were both, we might be a little bit doom and gloom guys to some degree. Maybe you more than me.
Oh, me for sure.
But there was a period there, middle of last year, where I was finishing some projects. The rate market, you know, was going psycho. And we had some conversations and I very much like, I battened down the hatches.
Yeah.
Right? Like discretionary spending was curbed a little bit, you know, and this started to feel like something that maybe we could recreate in a different way. The problem was we're like, no big deal. We'll just record it from home. And it didn't happen. Some of you will know this analogy because anytime you asked, I said this, it was like when you cancel your gym membership, because you're like, no big deal. I'll just use the treadmill at home. And then you never do, right? Like, so there's something to be said for paying for service, going to a place and doing the thing.
Yeah.
We felt like, oh, we'll just do it from home. And it never happened. And then weeks became months and so on.
And by going to do it at home, I think had a quick realization of how much work goes into this.
Yeah, totally.
And like, shout out to everyone that's been involved in this, Brad Epp, Tristan Ross, the guys over at BNV, Mark and Jamie, Tanner. Like, there's been so much involved, and anyone else who has done work for us, like, there was a ton of work, and I think we were probably a little naive to it because when we started, hit the ground running, and we just immediately hired them. But also to put it in perspective for some people, you think, again, it's simple. We were spending $7,000 to $10,000 a month to produce this thing.
Jesus.
Okay? So like, it's not just a casual thing that goes on, and so it had an impact. It wasn't like we were trying to save $400 a month here.
Yeah.
And so to produce things at that high a quality level, while having everything else we have going on, everything has to be automated, it adds up really fast. So anyways.
And trying to be like, well, what are we, also were lacking to some degree a clear vision of why we were doing this and what we wanted to accomplish through it. Because to spend that kind of money, it was like, all right, well, now we have to monetize it in a really aggressive way. But that's not what we want it to be about. Obviously, we want to have sponsors and we want to provide value that people might invest in and so on. But we don't want to just be up here shilling products to try to keep the lights on. So by going a little bit more lean and mean, we can make sure that the, you know, integrity of the program is not compromised.
Exactly.
And we can do it for the right reasons.
Exactly. That's why we've come full circle. We're back in the studio that we started with. We're going to try and run out of here and kind of work our way back up more organically. We have better systems in place. So hopefully as we kind of grow some sponsorship, we can put that towards better content, cooler guests. I'm like, when I say cooler, more educated guests that can provide us and provide you guys with the things you want to hear about and learn about.
Yeah, so, and some of you don't even like watch this on YouTube. So I don't think it matters as much that we're sitting in this, what looks like an amateur porno setup here. It's great.
I spent a lot of time talking to companies that produce and make podcasts and make big brand podcasts.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter. Look at Joe Rogan's. He's in a messy, messy office with his big, greasy sign in the background.
Yeah, totally.
You look at a lot of the biggest ones, they have very basic setups because really it's the content. It's the hairlines. That's what the people are here for.
Yes, that's what they come in to tap in for. The outfit chirps.
Yeah.
I love that you wore a gray shirt. So you just blend in perfectly to the background and I'm not much better.
You were in a gray shirt as
well. We're going to be borderline, you know, not even visible.
Neither of us thought about that at all for today.
We're rusty.
We're a little rusty.
We're getting back though.
But we're back and that's what we're here for. So again, guys, thanks for tuning back in. If you're tuning back in, if you're tuning in for the first time, podcast about real estate and everything going on in that world. And we dabble in some other stuff, some crypto, some business. And I think we are going to try and get into some more of that as this year, as season three progresses. Do we want to start with, I got a question. I have one single question here that I received from a listener who I told we were bringing it back. And he texted me and said, hey, you want to do this question? So it's Taylor from Enfield. It's actually my neighbor. And he wanted to ask us, what podcasts and YouTube channels do you guys recommend for potentially similar content or...
Oh, similar content?
It doesn't have to be similar content, but interesting content. And what do you listen to? And so I'll answer first because I wrote some stuff down.
Okay.
Oddly enough, I don't really listen to podcasts.
I had never listened to a single podcast until we started this.
Yeah. And I'm still on that. I started a little bit now when I drive.
Yeah, same.
And a lot of audiobooks, but that's not what he asked. So podcasts, the two that I find myself kind of watching, listening, is My First Million.
Okay.
And Colin and Samir.
And I don't know either one of those, so I'll have to check those out.
My First Million is kind of about people who have bought businesses and made their first $1 million. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, they've made a lot more than that. Colin and Samir are more, people are going to correct me on this, but they follow a lot of YouTubers, I find. A lot of people who have built brands, built businesses out of their brands and their online presences. I first watched their one with Mr. Beast. And I've watched a few since then, but I like the two guys. They're really casual and chill, and they ask really good questions that you're kind of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be the podcasts. YouTube channels, this is, and I'm a YouTube kid. Like, I YouTube man child all day. Still love it. This is what I watch. I watch the stuff every single day. Forbes, I crush Forbes.
Yeah.
I love Forbes. Forbes is cool because I used to get the magazines. I still do. But they every single article that's in their magazine, they make a YouTube video for now, which is kind of nice because a lot of times I find myself not getting the time to read the mag. And so I can just have this playing as I'm working. And it gives like a 4 to 7 minute story about like a new business that's getting started or why it's successful or what's going on in the market. So I watch a lot of Forbes YouTube. Ryan Serhant, we've talked about him a few times on here.
Yeah, still check him out. I like Ryan.
His energy is amazing, man. I come off his videos and I'm high. Like, I'm just like, let's take on the world.
Yeah.
He's always pumping it up. Like, he's on top of, like, he's, this video is about him crushing a big deal or his day. And while he's doing it, he's always giving some motivation and there's always some value there. Cold Fusion, you ever heard of Cold Fusion?
No.
So they're fully, I don't want to say animated, but there's no like physical people in the video. The guy, it's a host that talks over video. It's a bunch of clips.
Yeah.
And they're usually 20 minutes long and they're very in-depth about stories that are taking place. And like, it'll be like how Apple AR is going to change the marketplace. And it'll be a 20-minute video and they're really well-researched and detailed. If you haven't watched it and you're into anything along those lines, he does businesses as well. Like he'll do like the Sam Bankman-Fried stuff from the crypto exchange He did like a really, two really in-depth videos explaining everything. Channel 5 News, you ever heard of this? You would like Channel 5 News.
That sounds familiar.
So he's like, right now he's doing a series on the border crossing.
Okay.
So he tries to make a news coverage station that like shows legitimately what's going on. So he just drives straight down to the border crossing and he starts interviewing people that are jumping the border.
Oh, sick. Okay.
So he'll like go right up to the fence and there's
excuse me, sir.
Literally. There's literally guys. So he like learns Spanish and he's talking to people that are jumping the Mexican border as they're doing it. And they're like jumping and he's like, hey, like, are you scared? And they're like, yes. And like, why are you doing this? And like, well, there's so much terrorism in Mexico, blah, blah, blah. And then he'll go do some background research. Like, is there that much terrorism in Mexico? Or is it that by doing that, you can seek asylum, so you're actually able to jump the border legally?
Right.
Anyway, so he goes into it all. I find he's really interesting and covers hot topics. When there was the big riots in the States, he goes to all of them. The guy who broke into, what was it?
Field reporter at riots.
Yeah, man, literally. And the White House, when they stormed a Capitol. The main guy that got prosecuted with the like hat and all the he like interviewed him. Like he does cool stuff like that. Final one before I ream on for any longer.
I was gonna say you're watching a lot of pods.
I watch a lot of YouTube channels. Donut Media. I just open my phone and scroll through like my recommended.
Yeah.
Donut Media is all car videos.
Okay.
They're kind of goofy. Honestly, they are very goofy. It's kind of like brain dead car content, but it's kind of funny.
Okay.
Petrolicious if you want true car content. I like stuff like that where they make beautiful car montages.
Gotcha.
Anyways.
Okay, so mine, I'll rip through mine a little quicker. I love Theo Von, so I watch a lot of Theo Von, especially if he's got a good guest on.
Yeah.
I'll occasionally watch Jordan Peterson, depending on who the guest is. I really like the Looney Hour. That's a Canadian podcast where there's like a real estate agent and a couple guys in the finance market side of things. Really, really cool content there. Shout out to the guys at Canadian Real Estate Investor. I watch a lot of mainly their short form content. And Breaking Points, like if you want kind of more of a news-based, I guess that's more of a channel. That's not a podcast. And what else do I kind of listen to? Oh, Old Man and the Three, which is JJ Redick's basketball podcast. I really like that. Not all those are real estate related, obviously, but yeah, that's what I'm listening to. So do we have kind of, I almost feel like this is the new year, even though we're a few weeks into it, but it's a great time to relaunch this. Do we have sort of a mandate, a mission statement now with this moving forward?
Now you put me on the spot because I haven't written out the mission statement. And today I came in and I was like, prepare for the pod. Make sure you write out your mission statement and the vision statement.
Sorry.
So we're going to announce
that.
We'll have that for next episode. This is our classic. We're already starting to push things off. But I kind of rambled it out. And the idea is that we want to bring content that actually provides value to the people that are listening. We answer the questions that they're looking for. We bring on guests that give the interesting ideas. And again, answer the questions that they have. And so really our focus here, instead of it being, and I think it's where we had gotten, right? We want to bring some news coverage, talk about that. And then kind of some things that we're learning in the market and things that we also find interesting and new.
So what's happened with you in the last 6-7 months?
What has happened? My hair receded another 3.5 inches. And
running out of real estate.
I am running out of real estate. I'm going to be buying it back.
Not
hopefully
making any
this
more
year.
Real estate.
No. But no, in all seriousness, I haven't made any moves. I'm in the same place I was at when we last were on here. And I was kind of saying, I'm hitting the brakes. I'm hitting the brakes. The biggest thing that's changed, and I had announced it right when we stopped, was I had launched a private lender with Ryan
McNeil
and Zach Muir. And that's been a big focus for me, kind of tidying up my real estate portfolio and changing gears. I'm in this place where I wasn't sure if I wanted to develop and start building buildings. I want to keep buying old inventory. If I want to even stay in that marketplace at all, do I want to get into commercial? And so I'm in that explorations phase right now where I'm not diving too deep into anything because I found myself buying old inventory like crazy because I was making money, but I wasn't necessarily loving what I was doing.
Yeah.
And kind of in learning that now, I'm trying to...
And the model was changing. It continued to change even the last 6 months. It's different than it was then.
The model is totally different than it was when we started this. And I mean, that probably contributed to it a bit, but I'm glad it did because it otherwise I would have just kept going in this haze. And I don't think I was enjoying it. I was just kind of doing it because there was an opportunity to do so.
Right.
But so yeah, so things haven't really changed. I've been just focusing heavily on Keystone. That's been growing really, really well. There's been a ton of demand. So really happy with that. Hoping to close on some commercial stuff here coming soon. And yeah, I think
when you say commercial, what do you mean? Like business centric or like not industrial, to be clear? Like you mean true commercial, but more business plays with
storage lockers.
Right.
So looking at closing on some storage lockers, I would like to start closing on potentially like commercial spaces as well. And I have been shopping, buying some operating companies. If I do that or not, I don't know. Like you can only be spread over so many things. So part of me is like, oh, maybe I liquidate the real estate portfolio and start looking at buying operating companies and trying to try that transition. I've gotten a lot of heat for that. People are like, oh, really? That's a stupid idea. You've done all this work. And you're right. When you look at a real estate portfolio, you're like, oh, I have this much equity, $1 million of equity. Mm-hmm. Once you sell, clean everything up, blah, 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 you walk away with $300,000-$400,000. It's like, I probably could have just levered that. Or like, what value does that provide me today?
Right.
That, is it really going to outpace what the growth of that $1 million within the real estate would do? Mm-hmm. Hard to say. And so I end up flip-flopping back and forth a lot. Additionally, I know when I buy an operating business, in my head, like I'm sure we've all seen online, like buy an absentee business and it just starts pumping cash flow into your pockets and your pockets and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I already know, like I'm going to buy a business. A ton of problems on the management side. A ton of the customers are going to go away because they were only coming because of the previous owner. Mm-hmm. Like there's a ton of stuff. And then the books are always slightly off from where they actually are in expenses. And
also like the multipliers aren't as sexy and the exits aren't as easy because with real estate, you can knock on wood. And it certainly recently, you've been able to exit it pretty quickly if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And you could also take equity out pretty easily. Businesses, mm-hmm. it's a little harder. First of all, you're buying and like, I don't know what multiplier, it depends on the industry, but like a 5x multiplier.
It depends. It would be on for small businesses, 3 to 4.
Oh, so what that means essentially is you take the profit of the company and its value is 3 to 5x that profit. So a company that's making $100,000, might sell for between $300,000 and $500,000. And that $100,000, to be clear, like this is the tricky thing in dealing with someone who's selling a business. They're like, oh yeah, the business makes $70,000. It's like, well, you pay yourself $70,000.
Yeah.
But if you disappear, then I need to hire someone for your job and I'm going to have to pay them 50. So really the business only actually makes $20,000. So it's a little bit tricky, but long story short, raising the value of a business can be really, raising the cash flow of a business can happen with better management, but you won't necessarily see as big of an increase as maybe we've been able to get in some real estate unless you really crush it. And then how do you access that?
And someone who buys businesses, and if we have someone who listens who does, might have a lot to say about it.
Yeah, but yeah, hit us up.
Because there's, on the flip side, if you're doing like on, it's the same with real estate. When you're shopping them, you can get deals that are off market. So the multiple isn't that high. The multiple tends to get higher as a business gets bigger.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. It's almost like reducing the cap rate as the building gets bigger, which is the same that you see in real estate, right? Yep. The returns reduce on bigger buildings. Not to get into something super complicated off the start, but there is also sometimes the opportunity to, if you can get a new product line going or you can increase revenue stream aggressively, that you can have a huge lift on values, or maybe there's some efficiencies you can gain. But to what Chandler's saying, there's a lot of sometimes there's a lot of businesses that just kind of run standardized and you can only increase them by 5-10%, whatever it may be. So yeah, it's a totally different thing.
And you just can't get your money out or get out of the industry because sometimes it takes years for a business to sell.
Oh yeah.
Because it's out there, it takes a certain person. So if you're like, yeah, you know what, this isn't for me, you can't just turn and sell that property. You can't just refinance and get your equity out. Like it's, so it's a commitment.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, that's one of the things I'm looking at it. But really, like I said, the focus right now for me is the lending with Keystone. That in itself is another business and I'm an actual active partner there. So I got to keep my focus on that.
Cool. So any real estate news or acquisitions that you want to share or nothing really changing?
I'll bring some stuff as I close them. We got offers out. There's things that I have under contract, both buying and selling. Like I said, I want to keep it on the lowdown for the most part, but...
You don't want to fly too close to the sun?
Yeah, no, I think I've had some issues in the past sharing a little too much on the mic. And so...
Anything you say can and will be held against you?
Everything you say will be held against you. So yeah, that was a learning experience. And that's part of coming back here now. We want to make sure we keep our heads in check and keep things straight. Mm-hmm. But I think everyone had fun with what we said before. And
yeah. What do you think maybe you learned last year?
From this or in general?
Just in general. What was your takeaway? It was a crazy year, man. It's hard to look back, but it was a roller coaster. Rates started to run start of the year.
Yeah, I think, what would I say my biggest takeaway and different change from last year was? I definitely got I got checked in the sense that, I mean, I think I said this last year too, but I was definitely cocky in the fact that I could just go into any industry and just be a beast at it and undervaluing what you have to learn and that it takes time. The other thing that I'm learning is I just haven't experienced cycles, full economic cycles. That is something I just have not seen. And when I chat with a lot of more senior business owners, real estate owners, and they talk about the cycles, and I'm always why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And they're it goes all the way around, man. And I think we may have gone over a crest at this point. And so I'm going to ride out for a little while. And so I'm trying to be prudent and prepare for that. But the hyperness in me is struggling to understand that the cycles don't happen. Rates went up mid to late last year. So then I'm not in my head, I'm okay, by Christmas, we're going to collapse. And then we'll go through the death cycle in 2024, 2025, and then we'll be back up. It's no, the collapse that I'm talking about, or the down, if there is a downturn, that takes years for that to take place. That slowly falls. Similar to how the growth phase, even with the COVID money, which accelerated it in crazy, it took years for that growth phase to take place. Oh, 2018 was pretty good. 2019 was strong. Mm-hmm. That was a great year for us. And then 2020, it just went nuclear.
Yeah.
But it still was a 4-year ramp up to the peak.
It's true.
It's the same thing on the way down. It starts to curl off, and then you go through 4 years of shit as it comes down. And so I think I'm kind of learning that.
So does that mean, do you think the worst is still to come?
I think so.
And what does that look like for you? Here we go, baby. We're just picking it back.
Okay, let's
right
go.
On the June train.
Here's pessimist Neil coming in.
You're not alone in this now, man.
No, I think most people are at this point, and you see it in a lot
not
of the articles.
But most people.
Well, realtors in their head are, but just not in their Instagram reels. But
it's a great time to buy, great time to sell.
So, all right, now you've stirred the pot. So I was saying this when we stopped, but rates were up. And first off, I was a lot of these buildings don't make any sense right now. In Atlantic provinces, predominantly Nova Scotia, then a lot of rent controls came into place, rent eviction laws came into place. And prior to that, and they came, they slapped them out of nowhere. Prior to that, people were buying like crazy because there were no rules and you could do whatever you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so a lot of people got stuck holding the bag on this. Additionally, CMHC changed rules, this and that. So I think there's going to be some pressure on some of the resale market. And I think, fortunately, our market's pretty strong, that some of the buildings got sucked up, that people are willing to take on the risks. But I definitely think it's still to come here where some people are not making money on these buildings. And they're only realizing that now. I even saw it on my own stuff. I wasn't paying a ton of attention to the numbers. And now I'm trying to squeak out, reduce my contract rates for everything to try and clean things up. Cause I'm okay, we need to have a fair bit of cash flow.
Yeah.
Cause the other thing, and this is the one that I think is going to be, it's funny. Whenever I have a theory in my head, I talk to a bunch of different people every day, bankers, realtors, developers, investors. And I put that out there just to see what their feedback is. I think rents are going down. I think rents are going to come off. Before I was talking about, what happens when people just stop paying rent? And so you saw that going on in Toronto for a bit. But I genuinely think the rent market's going to come down. And in the last week, I've now seen two reports saying rents are down. And this is, I think, a fairly problematic thing in the sense that, similar to houses, not only are rents down, but it's nuanced that old product might feel it worse than new product will, right? It's vice versa.
Yeah.
It could go vice versa.
What's driving the rents down? Is it affordability or not? If it's people not being able to afford them, because there is that threshold, then the new stock that wants or needs top dollar to float their construction costs, they may struggle more, and they don't maybe have the ability to discount as much as something else. But it stands to reason that it would affect older stock, less amenitized stock first. It also is going to crush the periphery. Let's be honest, man. People rent outside of town when they can't afford it in town. That's a thing. But, you just said that this stuff is a lag. So are we coming up on it or?
So I think it's just starting to happen now. I know hyper-locally, when I look at Halifax and I drive around, there are so many damn big buildings. And I'm
that are going
up. I'll start reading my reasons. There's a ton of buildings that are just starting. Like there is an insane amount of buildings that are just starting. There are an insane amount that are getting cladded up right now. And there's a bunch that are opening right now. And I think we're about to have a big opening phase this summer. Like I think summer 2024, a lot of very large developments are coming online to start taking on people. I don't know how well that's going to go. For a bunch of reasons. Here's like one thing that I've said.
And that'll time up really well with when all the students leave town and all of that stock kind of opens up too.
All the students leave town. All the Airbnbs came to market. Like there was a ton of furnished rent. I rented a furnished place for a reasonable rate because there was a shit ton of them on there because they all came on when the Airbnb rules came in. Then you have students leaving and then they're talking about reducing the international student visas.
Yeah.
So that's going to have an impact. Additionally, this is one thing I've been harping to everyone is the way, because everyone's like, well, but the CMHC says we're short 30,000 units. Dude, the way they're doing their calculation, as far as I know, is it's like if it's 100,000 immigrants in, they divide by 1.7 or 1.8 or even 2. So like we need 50,000 houses, 50,000 units. In what world, in what world are there only 2 immigrants living in a unit? Just answer me that.
Yeah.
First of all, a ton of them are renting houses where there's like 6 to 8 people at least. At least I've been in, you've been in 2 bedrooms. There's 2 bedrooms on market on multi-unit buildings. There's 2 bedrooms on market and this is their showing unit. And there's 6 people in there. There's 2 beds in each bedroom. And then there's 2 more beds in the living room.
So you're saying the need isn't as high as perhaps it's made out to be. I don't know if I agree with that because, you know, there's already the natural shortage that we do have. There's some net migration from other provinces. There's people moving to the city.
There's a ton of people moving out of here now. I think the new migration numbers for Nova Scotia aren't going to be super sexy either.
No, they're not. They're not for sure. I agree with you. The question I sort of view is when is it going to happen? I agree with you. So I posted about this the other day and what this cap could mean. One of the things we've always had that's given this market strength and it's why our rents are disproportionately high is because we are still a university town. It's weird to think of a city as large as we are as a university town, but we are. We have like the highest universities per capita.
A ton of universities here.
So this cap, which is going to, they think, reduce student visas by about 35%, is pretty meaningful. Like, I don't
know
how many
huge
international students came to Halifax. Like, I would be just kind of pulling numbers, but it's probably, I don't know, 10,000?
At least.
Right? So, because I remember something about it being 11,000 international people came to Nova Scotia. A lot of them are coming here. I guess a bunch also went to Cape Breton University, but then they tend to migrate to Halifax afterwards. Either way, like if you reduce that by 3,500 people.
That's massive.
Like that's a meaningful
That's 10
decrease.
Giant, well, when I say giant, again, if you're listening from anywhere outside of Atlantic, you're like, that's not a giant building.
Yeah, 100 unit building here is big. So yeah. But that's 10 100 unit buildings.
That's 10 300 unit buildings.
Yeah.
So for us, that's 10 of our biggest buildings.
Easily. That aren't even built yet.
Well, now again, back to what I was saying, they probably 3,500 people, they probably divide that by 3. So maybe 1,000 units. Exactly. 1,000 unit buildings.
Units.
It's still 1,000 units that are not going to get leased up.
So I can't be convinced that that's not going to make a difference. Like that sounds like it's going to make a difference to me. And that estimate of a 35% decrease is across Canada. And we presumably are going to see a disproportionately greater decrease because as a province, even we have such
so
a huge amount of immigrants per capita for universities because we have so many universities and they made a real push and we had the PR program. So like Cape Breton University more than doubled enrollment in a very short period of time. So I do think that is going to have an impact here in town. And then, you know, you build the supply and it takes years to build the supply. So I think the actual rollover is going to be like 12 months from now. Like I think next year's where we're
this
really
going to
see
this time next year we're going to be like, oh shit.
I think this time next year is going to be the first wave of there's less demand. So rents are going to stay steady. Or maybe like if you don't have a good product, you're going to have to go back to like maybe the fair market as opposed to like the little premium that you could get. And then I think after that, it's going to be, hey, just for relativism's sake, I need to adjust my rents because something new came on. Because those buildings take a while to come on.
And while we're just at it, just being negative as hell, we're back, we're negative.
I think it's the reality.
I agree with you. But the other thing that, again, hyper-locally to Halifax, they just upzone the whole damn city, which is something that we have been screaming about.
And I feel like that's a whole episode. Are we?
And it is a whole episode. Yeah. But I think it also feeds into the idea of potential downward pressure because now you have that whole entire, anything around universities, all those houses can be as many units as you can fit.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a lot of people that go after that. Like there's going to be, and a lot of, again, you think small operators don't have an impact. They do. They make up more than half of our rental market.
Also, I know you aren't as hands-on with your rental, you know, showing units as I am. I turned over 7 units at the start of this year.
Yeah.
And it's January 26th.
Yeah.
So for like renting for February 1st and into March in a couple cases, like 7 units.
Yeah.
My applications are still very high.
Yep.
My quality applicants are not good. I'm talking, you know, 70 applications and I'd invite 6 people out for showing.
Yep.
So as a result, I'm more inclined to have a lower rent and get one of these because of the 7 that come out. There's this misconception right now in the city that you can't find an apartment. And it's not true. If you're willing to pay the price and you are a good applicant, landlords are still very much keen to have your business. And yep. in some cases, you may be able to get better terms if you are a really good tenant because the applications out there are not especially strong. You know, people with low credit or no credit, you know, people whose income doesn't match up what you're looking to get in the building to cover costs. So then you find yourself like, gosh, that was a really good tenant. I would love to have them in the building. I would probably, you know, give them a discount. Or I intentionally, like, I didn't raise my last building because I felt the rents were fair. At some other buildings, I was like, oh, you know, my applications aren't as good as they once were. I'm going to keep that rent where it was the year before. And I got great applicants again. So now I feel we're back in that market where as a landlord, you're saying I would take a little bit less money or keep rents where they are to have a good tenant. Now, is that rents coming down? No, but rents flatlining while everything else is still going, like inflation is still a thing. Rents flatlining is a huge change. It's a huge change.
Massive. They've been up 20% every year. That is an enormous change.
Those numbers are a little bit skewed, but
I know there's always like one dude rented a $20,000 in our city. It's not big enough, so one unit goes for $20,000 a month, and it just completely...
Also, that only measures new lease. It doesn't count for anything for the people who are staying in an existing lease, and by law can only be increased 2% or now 5% here in the new year. But whatever. So I think it's going to roll over. Also, we historically are after Toronto. Like, so Toronto does something, and 12 months later we do it. There's a lot of early in the year, but there's a lot of reports of rents declining in Toronto. If we follow that
Toronto's
trend
of
like,
the universe.
It is an indicator in Canada in a lot of ways, and we tend to lag it. So it's happening there. It could happen here for all these reasons. What does that mean? Like, I don't think it's like, oh my gosh, we need to panic, but it's something to keep in mind.
I'm freaking out.
Well, if you're starting a project and are banking on some absurd numbers, like, well, last year I got 1600 for this. So by the time next year comes around, I should be able to get 1725. It's like, not really. No, like you might get exactly the same. You know, you'll still have the lift of your lower priced units and turning those over. But I think rents are stabilizing and are going to roll over, which I think is a good thing too, probably.
It is. They were way out of sight. It needs to get under control. I think if things start to slow down, I think it'll also lend itself to more affordable housing projects going on because they're creating a lot of incentives on that side. And a lot of projects won't make sense again unless they go affordable. And aside. Don't agree?
I think...
I look at all these outskirts projects, okay? Let me explain a little more. Like, I see stuff that's slightly on the outskirts of town. Guys are picking up land for 5 to 10 a door, and then they're looking at putting on cheap little wood frame, stick frame stuff. And it was working, and it is working, and it might continue. And I know we both have colleagues that are doing it, and like, no disrespect, I think they're killing it. They're great projects. But I think there's going to become a point where it's just like in the city, there is a saturation point. But a lot of those sites can handle a lot more density than where that saturation point is, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think to complete that, like to finish those sites off, it's going to get to a point where it's like, CMHC, if the government's willing to give me $75,000 a door, now I can actually make these things feasible at $300-$500 a month less rent.
Yeah.
And so instead of just nuking the project, laying everybody off, killing this machine that I've now built to get through this storm of slowdown, maybe I'll start doing some affordable housing. And that will give me the opportunity to rent half of this neighborhood out at $1,600 instead of $2,300.
Yeah.
That's my thought process.
Yeah. I think it's just like anything else, blood goes to the core, right? Like when times are tight. So if we do think there's going to be a rollover in rents in downtown Halifax, it would be pretty dumb to think there's not going to be a bigger rent rollover in outside areas. That seems to be common sense to me.
Enfield to the moon.
Enfield to the moon, baby. But also some of those other areas haven't been upzoned yet, right? Like they're not in the planning. So they're not going to have this increase in supply immediately in their neighborhood the way that if you're investing in the core is going to be there. So all really interesting to think about moving forward. Yes.
Continuing on the moving forward concept, because I kind of rambled.
Okay.
And I have one more idea in my head. And we'll do a full separate pod on this. What markets looking at industrial, commercial, res, multi-res? So res is single family and duplex and that kind of crap. Where, like...
Where's the smart money?
Do we want to do an episode just going over each one of these, maybe?
Sure, we'll do an episode going over it, but, like, I can answer the question a little bit here now.
So, okay, which of the four, just give me your worst and your best in the next 3 years. Like, industrial shit, okay? Like, your Burnsides, your warehousing.
Yeah.
Commercial, so your strip malls, your commercial plazas, that kind of stuff, restaurants, etc. Single family res.
Mm-hmm.
We'll count like townhouses and duplexes and semis or whatever. Multi-res, big multi-unit apartment buildings. So I want to up, down, and flat. And then we'll get into all the details in another episode.
I think industrial still has a lot of upswing.
I
think industrial still has a lot of upswing because the vacancy is, like, you think the vacancy is low in residential. Like, it know that it's the same for industrial. And like, there's still, I think, a lot of meat on that bone. So I think that'll continue to.
Okay, you're saying up on the industrial.
I think
we're
going to
do a full episode.
Yes, up on
we're
the
doing a bunch of teasers to get people to actually try and listen to a couple more episodes.
Yeah, yeah. All right, up on the industrial. The commercial I'm not as keen on just because you said the word strip plaza, which to me is like, okay, this vape store is probably going to go out of business. Restaurants are going to struggle.
Oh,
as
the economy hurts, I know.
Vapes are a bad example. Booze and drugs do very well in recessions. But like, you know, retail storefronts, my gosh, like recession, like they don't do well.
People aren't spending.
Yeah. So those things.
You're saying down.
I would say probably down on.
Flat's commercial. An option, by the way. He's saying down.
Just go down. Right. Then I'm going to say.
Single family, residential, duplexes, townhouses.
I think it's going to be steady. So if you want to call like steady, the same as what it's always been here, which is
guy
like,
says flat.
Yeah.
This is a 3-year projection.
I'm not going to say it's flat in terms of like actual value, but I'm going to say it's going to hopefully return to the norm, which is like. Our usual 2-3% growth, like pace of inflation kind of type
okay.
stuff.
Effectively but not 20%.
But I'm a little bit, I feel
and
like.
Not noticeable drops.
I think there's going to be a bump this year. But anyway. But
multi-res?
Multi-res is going to have to pull back here in sometime in the near future and find a new baseline. So
like the valuation's like,
level out. Yeah. So that's got to have a pullback followed by a leveling. And I think that should happen pretty quickly because that market, even though there isn't the number of volumes, everyone's dealing with the same math spreadsheets. So it's intuitive, savvy people who should be, in theory, unemotional. So it's like, hey, these are the numbers that actually make sense. Like for a while, they're a certain type of stock. Everyone's just like, yeah, that's 100 to 30 to 140 a door, right? Mm-hmm. Like everyone just kind of universally accepted it, but no one's adjusted that in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
It's like, there might have to be an adjustment on that. And then the as complete people are like, yeah, as complete, that's 200 a door.
Yeah.
And now it's like, maybe like as complete, that's 175, and the purchase price should probably be closer to like 105, right? Like,
yeah.
So I think there's going to be a correction in that, and then a steady
condo market next 3 years.
Oh gosh,
that's a little bonus one.
Well, you skipped the one I'm most excited, which was office.
Okay, condo well, add office market, on there. Don't yell at me.
Condo market. I think the condo market is going to be flat.
Okay. Yeah. Office, the one you're most excited
office,
about.
Office, I'm excited about because I love the idea of office conversions, even though so far they've been terrible. My understanding, and I wish we could get Elliot from...
We're going to get Elliot
on here. Like, they're apparently going to be lessening a bunch of the requirements for office conversions.
Now they make sense because they've actually taken a bunch. Yeah.
The great thing about buying an office building to convert was exactly the same as the worst part about buying an office building to convert. Like, you have the structure. That's awesome. Problem is you have the structure and you can't really change it. And so when you're trying to take an existing structure and conform it to something new and bring it to today's code or whatever you want to call it, that can be very cumbersome. Like stuff about your envelope, but stuff about your amenities and common areas and all that stuff. It was getting really handcuffing. And I guess apparently they're going to get rid of some of that stuff. So I'm excited about that because I think if office was a category on its own and in its own right, it seems to be getting crushed. I'm not tapped into the office, you know, leasing world at all, but like, the vacancy rate is high. It seems to be going against a trend. Like the downtown office building doesn't seem to be on trend as much anymore. So as it is, I would have it as a down, but the idea of converting it to residential to me is super exciting.
So overall, that long-winded answer, you said down.
Yeah, down.
Over the next 3 years. Valuations.
Down as office, up as conversion, right? Like,
so if I own an office building, what's happening to my value?
It's down, yeah. Unless you want to convert it to res.
Okay, so I just did a little check there.
Okay, we're going to recap this in the next episode, and then you're going to say if you agree or differ, because I think that's just There's a lot of juice on there, and we'll talk about that next time.
Okay. Do we want to hear my takes, or we'll let all people are gonna make people wait?
I think that's literally the other episode we're talking about.
Okay, fine. We'll wait for my takes in the next episode.
Yeah.
Obviously, just say I have some. My arrows might go in different directions.
Yeah, that tracks.
That usually fits how we do things.
You also had the question in advance, and I'm here just talking about
it. I didn't have the question in advance. Did you see me writing it down over here? Right. Also, this damn camera turned off. But anyways, yours camera's been going the whole time, which is good.
It just turned off?
Yeah, I mean, that's an old phone. Look at that phone. That phone's been run over by a fire truck. It barely holding on.
Oh, man. So it's just going to be footage just of me.
It's just me of you the whole time talking at me.
Roll of you just like nodding like this.
I think we actually, yeah. We definitely...
And me nodding like this and your voiceover. Okay.
I'm doing the nod right now. Don't mind me, everybody. I'm just silently moving my arms to get some B-roll.
This is the quality content people have been missing.
This is what they wanted. Do you have any news that you want to go over?
Well,
what's new in your world? Or you talked to ask me what was up.
Usually you reciprocate that kind of question, Neil.
You just said you were...
Yeah, I was.
You were blasting out questions. I had no chance.
Yeah. So I would say last year, you know, I had so many projects to finish, and I'm still finishing one now. But I've sort of spent a lot of, especially Q4 of last year, trying to figure out what exactly my goals are.
Mm.
Why am I doing them?
Mm-hmm.
What is the end game? And I'm not going to pretend like I have an answer. And some of this is more...
I thought we discussed the end game for you. It was frozen in a snowbank holding onto a lockbox.
Trying to get out a key out of a lockbox in a beautiful semi. just dying on my sword. Jeepers. That's a harsh look into my Scroogian future. No, but I was like, okay, this is going to get into some deep stuff. Not really, but... Like, I know that a big part of my motivation, and I think I talked about this early on in this podcast, is, you know, my parents are phenomenal, incredibly supportive. They were, you know, kind of blue collar, down to earth people, didn't really have any background in real estate, didn't enjoy like the creature comforts of life. Yep. And still to this day, they live a humble life. And with that, always felt like a little bit of fear of, you know, not having enough, not having money, and also just a little bit of insecurity or feeling lesser than by not having these things. So I wanted to have this stuff. I wanted to be comfortable financially. I wanted to build something that I viewed to be impressive. I wanted to make sure my kids never had to worry about money or anything like that.
Yeah.
And that drove me for well over a decade.
Yeah.
Probably two decades almost. I'm getting friggin' old. That drove me for two decades.
Yeah.
But if that's your motivator, then when you reach the point where you're like, yeah, I don't need to worry about where the next payday is going to come from. I don't need to worry about the bills. I don't need to worry about how am I going to put a nice house over the heads of my family. Then what's my motivator?
Yeah.
And I couldn't answer that question. And I still struggle to answer it because if it was just to live a comfortable life, I should be satisfied where I'm at.
Yeah.
And if I should do anything, it would just be like, all right, well, now let's like tighten the screws on this, pay down the debt, and just chill.
Yeah.
And so then I had to acknowledge like, all right, some of it's about ego. Like, what do I actually want? And the long story short was that I've decided that, and part of it was a harsh reality check of this interest market because like everyone else out there, like it stung. It stung for me to have to refinance in higher market. It stung to me to carry debt that was variable. All of these things don't feel good. Mm-hmm. And it has changed my relationship with debt a little bit. And I was early on like very conservative with debt. And then thanks large part to you, not to blame you. Like I became more comfortable and leveraging debt. Like, because I had a lot to learn about that. And now like, okay, now I want to strike a balance, right? Of
just owning every single small cap, small building in Dartmouth.
Exactly. Low debt, low exposure. No, but like I made a point of paying off a lot of my variable based loans at the end of last year.
Yeah.
It's like I had a HELOC on a house because, or on a duplex because I did renovation, but I want that gone.
Yeah.
I want it gone.
Yeah.
And I took like three or four HELOCs and just wiped them.
Yeah.
Like I want to be a bit more conservative because I think lean times are ahead and I don't like this rate environment. It's hard to justify any business when you're paying interest at 7%. It's hard to recoup that regardless of what you're doing, let alone in the rental world where caps are 5 and rent caps are literally 5% and so on.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to now figure what does this new me look like? You know, am I still going to try to build a building? Am I going to liquidate some of these things and take those funds and pay down other debts? Do I have enough units now to cash flow a lifestyle that I would be happy with? I know I do if I have a particular model.
I'll answer that.
But, okay, answer it.
Yes.
Smarty pants.
Yes.
Yeah, and only.
I was saying new year, new me.
Yeah, only if I, you know, pay down the debts.
Unless you get into some new habits. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
If you start getting into the fancy shit. It's funny. It's all in stages. Like, you find that your parents didn't get into creature comforts. I look at you, not that you're that much older than me, but I think I'm like, there's all these other creature comforts that you can do. Mm-hmm. But I know, looking at you, what you're comfortable with and what you enjoy. I've said this to you a bunch of times. I've been on your butt about this.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you have the opportunity to chill.
This reminds me, I actually have to renew my lease on my RAV4. I was like, he's going to mention the RAV4.
I'm thinking in my head is the RAV4 this whole time.
I know, I am not going to swap out my RAV4. My 5-year term is up. It's a great automobile. I'm not going to swap it out. So you're right. You're right. I think I can. But right now I haven't because I've been constantly like, okay, refinance, buy another building. But at some point, the idea is to stop that. And,
what are you doing right now?
Pay them down. I do have an offer out there right now, but it's a small boutique building. Very manageable.
Boutique. They use boutique.
Oh, God. It is not boutique. It is. It's boohoo. It's not boutique.
Man.
But yeah. So it's evolving. It's evolving, I will say.
He's aware of it now. He's not changing his actions.
Hey, but you say that in jest. But that is important.
I'm doing the same thing. I'm not saying it like that.
For me to totally own the fact that, okay, this is why in some respects I'm feeling less motivation. Because I was like, why am I less motivated? Why am I less hungry? It's like, well, because you were motivated by fear for almost 2 decades. And when you take that out, what else is there to motivate you? And then I'm now motivated by, okay, I need to do some things differently and smarter and make some real planning for my family. But now I'm motivated by fun. Right. And if I enjoy renovating a building and
I think you generally enjoy providing really nice accommodations, like really proper places. I think you'll end up really liking. You'll really like building. I genuinely do.
Oh, I would fucking love building. It just doesn't make sense. And this was the other thing I was like, man,
but just sell some shit and then you go cash heavy in your first build.
And then I just build a building that makes no money every month. I'm like, I did it. Yeah.
Totally. Come on. That's how it starts, though. Because you look right now, you clean up a bunch of sites, you keep a couple prime ones that you want, and you build one.
Yeah. That is kind of what I'm thinking about.
And you roll it into the next.
But just to sort of finish the thought, it was okay, I was starting to feel guilty because why aren't I doing something smarter? Mm-hmm. Why am I, not raising all of my rents as much as I should?
Yeah.
Why am I overspending on a building to make it extra nice?
Yeah.
Should I have not done that purchase and instead done this thing over here, which would be the more responsible thing if my only goal was to cash flow as much money as humanly possible?
Yep.
So the fact that I'm I'm fully accepting that I do some of this stuff because I frigging enjoy it.
Yeah.
Has unburdened me from some of that fear and I can use that as my motivation more because I was starting to feel guilty that I was being a bit reckless.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, I've got people who rely on me. Why am I doing these things instead of maybe something a bit more conservative?
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, I'm doing it because I like it. And sometimes that's a good enough reason as long as I'm not being super silly over here. So that's why I want to balance a bit more fiscal, boring conservatism in some areas and then own the fact that hey, I might overspend on a unit by $7,000 to make it extra nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to do that because I like to do it.
Yeah. That's why you're going to like building, man.
Oh, I know. I love building. God, I would just build the nicest building downtown Dartmouth has ever seen in around 6 stories. But I walk into new construction, man, till this day. I will not name sites, but I've been in buildings and I've said it to you. I'm like, my stuff is nicer than this. My renovated stuff is nicer than this new construction building. But their margins are better. So.
And I think the other thing becomes, if you want to keep growing, how big the building is you're grabbing now and the other ones you might grab this year, realistically, you could start a 100-unit build. And yes, it takes 2 years, but at the end of it, you have 100 units.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Right.
Yeah.
And even though you're cash heavy, let's say you have to go cash heavy in it right now, that cash isn't lost. It's there in equity. And ultimately, the cash flow will be there. That's because you always, if you have to go cash heavy, then it gets made up with the cash flow because the banks will. Everyone's making the same cash flow ultimately, unless, you know what I mean? So,
and this was the thing, the opportunity I had to build, and people who've listened to this know, I had this opportunity to build. It was right there. I was at the 1-yard line. At the end of the day, man, I would have had very little equity in that building. The day I finished it, I would have exactly the equity I started with, which wasn't much. And I was intentionally going through a program where there'd be not much equity in there.
Yeah.
And imagine a scenario 2.5 years from now where rents are a little bit lower.
Yeah.
Like, there's a small margin of error. So you're right. I think if, like, to build something, like, I would want to almost have, like, call it crazy, like, 25% equity in the build, which people are there be like, yeah, of course, commercial, you have to have, like, a lot of people don't.
No, nah, man, I mean, they're 110% ultimately. It's 95% loan to value on the way they're setting it up, but...
Yeah, like, so I don't know if I feel good about that. And that is, you know, there's do stuff because you love it, but, like, taking on $1 million or $10 million of debt for something that's worth $10,500,000, that's a bit extreme, right? So maybe I can cash up here and do something that's really cash heavy. And I would still love to do that, man. I'm not going to pretend doesn't remain a goal. It does remain a goal, but I feel more at peace with some of the other decisions I'm making. And I feel like I'm going to have a good balance of, you know, paying that down the debt that I don't like, the debt that made me feel kind of icky.
Kind of gross.
Yeah. Like even VTBs, like I cleaned up a bunch of VTBs. I have no private money out there other than a construction draw. Mm. Like it's all clean and it feels good, man. Like it didn't feel great a lot of last year.
So close.
You know?
So close. This goddamn environmental issue is driving me bananas.
Yeah.
That also, if you want to know why I put the brakes on, I have sunk my life into a hole in the ground cleaning up oil. Like I'm not even kidding. It's nuclear. It's been insanely expensive.
Because you can't complete your refinance until that's done.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, the cost is, let's say, $200,000 so far, expecting another $200,000 of just pure cleanup.
My God, man.
So just take $500,000 out of whatever you're doing and just burn that. There's no added value. There's also...
Are you like underneath all the buildings now at this point?
I'm underneath one building.
Is it lifted?
Yeah.
It's lifted.
Yeah.
Yo, we got to do... we're going to record some content on site there. I want to see this thing.
And then I have this cost of the actual hole. Then I have the cost of like the empty unit.
Ooh, only one empty unit? You mean a whole empty building?
One empty unit. The front of the building still in the ground.
Just there, and there's a moat from their front door.
We are literally engineering a bridge out of the building right now, so you can get in and out of the building while we dig underneath
it. Bridge over troubled oil spills.
Yeah. And then you think about the carrying cost on the interest. I mean...
Because is that... Not to go into your business.
It's private.
Yeah.
It's private money. And it's not a small loan. So you add that on there.
It's just for the cleanup?
And then you look at the potential loss. That's where you just want to off yourself, is when you look at the potential refi that could have gone through a year ago, what I could have done with the capital, plus how much I would have saved and all the other stuff. And we're not done yet. Like, I got to get this finished, and then I got to refi still. So I got another 6-8 months of this bullshit. Right? So like that's why I'm not really making any moves. I'm just like, well, I'm just going to sit with some cash because I don't know what the hell I got going on here.
Yeah.
Like, it is... a nightmare. But I mean, hey, I can't cry over spilt milk. I did my due diligence. I had an environmental done. I did test pits. I literally did test pits around this building because there was suggestion that there might be problems.
Yeah.
Didn't find anything.
And then how did it come up now?
Because there was a tenant spilt gas all over the friggin' ground.
Shut up.
Yeah. We had to get it cleaned up. And when we uncovered one thing and then uncovered another thing. We just followed a seam
that's what
into
they
the
do,
ground.
Man. Like, so if you imagine like, say there's a 3-foot by 3-foot hole. You dig it. If it samples dirty, you go out more, and you dig wider and deeper until you get a clean sample. And so it doesn't matter if you're underneath, like if that keeps going, you go underneath the building next to you.
Yeah. Thank God I own like, that one too. But like, Jesus.
Buildings are going to look like New Orleans. Like, they're just
oh
like up
dude,
on the
100%.
Stilts.
There's a brand new retaining wall there. I had a brand new parking lot that I just ripped out.
Ugh.
Like it's
what's
it's,
crazy about that?
It's over
like
$1 million.
Made of petroleum. We just put a bunch of petroleum asphalt down on the ground, and you dig it up to get the petroleum out of the ground, and then pave over it again with asphalt.
And
that always strikes me as weird,
man. So anyway, it basically nuked the gains that I had made, about half of the gains that I made over the last 3 to 5 years, just burnt. So now I'm in kind of a restart phase, and that's why I want to kind of diversify a bit and have some different objectives within my portfolio. So. Anyways, I'm with you, man. It's trying to figure out what you want to do, why you're doing it, and then keeping your goals in sight and chasing them down. And that's why we're bringing this back, because I think part of the goal for both of us is I think we both enjoy doing this and kind of having the community involved and chatting with people about this stuff. And
yeah.
So for us, it was something that we always wanted to bring back. We never wanted to have it to go away. And man, again, like shout out to everyone who listens, because so many of you messaged us like, and have continued
twice a week, every week.
You guys
since
are unreal.
Last June.
Unreal.
What's up with the pod? Pod coming back?
Like, yeah.
And again, I think part of the reason that the challenge we had was like, we didn't know what we wanted to do with it. And feeling this pressure of, having to monetize it or having to do this, that, the other thing, it kind of made it feel a little bit like work, you know, and we didn't need more work in our lives. We have plenty of it. So we're back. I already enjoyed this here today quite a bit. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Forgiveness if we're a little bit rusty and, you know, we got the new dig set up and completely forgot to bring the cameras. So these are literally being recorded on old iPhones.
That one's not old. That's a 15 Pro, Monsieur.
Neil's got his phone and then his burner over here, apparently.
I got a burner running myself. So you're going to see some wonky clips of me, but Chandler's going to be in high def.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to see all the pores on his face.
Japers.
But anyways, enough rambling from us. I hope you guys found this interesting. It was a bit of a ramble fest. We're going to get back into our regular programming. We're going to open with some good news. We're going to keep you guys in the loop. And now you've heard some of the stuff that we have coming up. But we're going to be talking about specifically for Halifax. There's a ton of upzoning that took place in the last couple of weeks. I think we're going to do an Ontario and Alberta and BC, like a market update for each province around the country.
Yeah.
The years to come, I think we want to talk about that in a little bit more depth. We talked at a high level here what Chandler's takes were on the industrial, commercial, residential, multi-res, condo, and office markets. And then also some affordable housing stuff that's going on. There's been some progress on that front.
I will say we cast a lot of shade at the different levels of government and some of the things they were trying to do in CMHC.
They're making moves.
They'd be making the moves, man. First of all, like, some people may not want to hear this. In Halifax, Airbnb is dead.
Yeah.
It's done.
It sucks.
It's done.
It sucks.
Like, and some people are like, no, we're going to, like, it's done.
Yeah.
And the amount of units I've shown in the Eastern Shore, like down Lawrencetown, Cow Bay, that like were vacant and fully staged because they were Airbnbs, those units weren't turning to rentals. So maybe a small number were. I mean, Neil referenced the fact that he rented out one of his units. I don't think that that made a huge difference in the number of units in Halifax at all. Well, I'm just going to say that. I stand by that. But did it sure crush an industry? It's gone. Airbnb in Halifax is gone. Go try to get one. Like, they're not available. And they did that through a combination of rules, you know, fees, but also just the damn bureaucracy, man. What you have to file, how you have to register. It's just people like, you know, it's not worth it. So that's a huge change. And
big
maybe
hotel.
That moves a needle a little bit. Now you've got this upzoning,
yep,
which is going to bring on units like crazy. It's also, sneaky little thing, going to raise the property tax of all of those sites. So the city probably looked at their coffers. You know, we're going to talk about property tax. They're struggling big time. So I think part of the reason they did this was like, huh, this would be a really easy way to tax a bunch of people that are investors and lessen the tax burden on, you know, someone just chilling in their house. Unfortunately, those people who are on the corridors, they should, in a couple of years, have a big bump in their property tax bill as well. But the city's going to make extra tax money from that. And then what's the other? Oh, the CMHC stuff is the real deal. It's the real deal. They've continued to refine these programs to make them make sense. And I will say that I just took a 10-year affordability commitment with CMHC money, which means I'm going to have a building that 40% of it is going to meet CMHC standards for affordability for the next decade. This is not something I ever would have thought would be a thing, but like, it makes sense. They're also closing the gaps on like, hey man, you can't just renovate people and then take a CMHC loan. That's not what we're about. They've got rid of all of that. Like, so the CMHC stuff is the real deal and it's working and they're speeding it up. My first application took like 6 months and then maybe 3 weeks to close from there. So you're talking almost 7 months. This one, if it's not closed in 3 months, I would be surprised. So that's moving the needle and ultimately it's going to lead to more affordable housing. So 100%. There's another reason of how that's going to happen. So that's probably enough for today.
That is.
Yeah. Again, thanks for listening.
Thanks for waiting.
Thanks for the continued support. Yeah, if you were just hitting refresh, waiting for the new app, it's been a long 7 months. But yeah.
You guys are the shit. Thank you. Peace.
Thanks so much for watching the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, press like. Don't forget to subscribe. But also check us out on Instagram and TikTok. You can find all the links below. Thanks again for checking us out. When I was broke, I had rich habits. When I was broke, I had rich habits.